Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Last Tuesday, an Amtrak train bound for Philadelphia went off the rails, killing eight people and raising serious questions about the state of American railroads. At almost the same time, very different news out of South America. China is moving to build a brand new high-speed transcontinental railway stretching from Brazil to Peru, Atlantic to Pacific. Talk about a study in contrasts. This hour on Point, new rails south of the border, old ones in the United States, and China investing big in Latin America. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you make of high-speed rail in Latin America built by China? And what about America's infrastructure challenge? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Lots of big Chinese visitors to Latin America lately. In January, it was President Xi Jinping pledging $250 billion in investment in Latin America, a quarter trillion. Here he is at a meeting between officials from China and the community of Latin American and Caribbean states hosted by Beijing, interpreted here by Reuters.
The friendship of the two sides will keep growing stronger. China's Latin America fever and Latin America's China fever will just keep getting hotter.
Everybody gathering there in Beijing. And here's BBC News reporter Daniel Gallas, based in Sao Paulo, Brazil. In a report yesterday, he pointed out how Brazil has benefited from tons of Chinese money.
Chinese money is everywhere, digging Brazil's richest oil well, building transmission lines in the Amazon, and setting up ports that help send commodities like soybeans to Chinese consumers. There are now plans for a Chinese-funded railway that would cut through the whole of South America from the Andes to the Amazon, making trade cheaper between both continents.
Let's look at all that and the railway. Joining me first today from Washington is Kevin Gallagher, Associate Professor of Global Development Policy at Boston University. His forthcoming book is The China Triangle, Latin America's China Boom, and the Fate of the Washington Consensus. Kevin Gallagher, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
Kevin, I'm so glad you're here. A quarter trillion dollars over the next 10 years is a lot of money. I mean, that's up in the scale of the money that the U.S. government dumped out to try and get out of the recession. What's going on with China's huge investment in Latin America generally and infrastructure in Brazil in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. The Chinese premier, Li Keqiang, is in Latin America right now, going to Brazil, Colombia, and Chile. And if all these reports come true, he's going to be known as Keqiang Keqiang by the time he leaves the hemisphere. He's already, you know, this is being talked about as something brand new, but some research that we've done have shown that the Chinese have already lent more money to Latin American governments over the past 10 years than the Inter-American Development Bank, the World Bank, and the U.S. Export-Import Bank on an annual basis for big infrastructure projects, energy, mining, and so forth. For this new one, this Twin Ocean Railway project that's the big talk this week, it's really going to be the centerpiece of the relationship. And if, and I'd say it's a big if South American governments and China manage these projects in the right way, it's going to bring big benefits to Latin America, big profits for China, and a big boost for China's image in the region.
Well, let's look at this transcontinental railway. Railways have been so much in the news in the United States in the last week since the big crack-up in Philadelphia and all the death there and concern about lack of infrastructure investment. I mean, Amtrak talking about its $1.5 billion budget being cut back here. China's talking about a $10 billion brand spanking new high-speed railway. Can you describe the path it would take across South America, Kevin?
Sure. It couldn't Couldn't come at a better time. Latin America faces a major infrastructure gap of about 6.2% of GDP, something like $300 billion a year it's going to need for it. And right now they're facing less than 1% growth. So couldn't come at a better time. It's going to be called, or it's being referred to these days, as the Twin Ocean Railway Project, and it's going to go from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean. The routes through Brazil are much more defined. It'll go from Occport in Rio de Janeiro, state of Brazil, enter through Mato Grosso, Rondônia, and enter into Peru through the region of Acre. And then in Peru, it'll go to the Pacific. There's a couple routes under debate. Maybe that'll get hammered out this week. It could bring major benefits by helping facilitate trade both from South America to China, but also among South Americans themselves in primary commodities and a number of other things. But it's also high risk. We're cutting through the Andes Mountains and the Amazon rainforest here.
So we're talking about starting at a port not far from Rio, or I guess next to Rio on the eastern coast in Brazil. You only have to cross two nations to cross South America for those whose grasp of the map there is not that great. Just Brazil up into the Andes and then Peru to cross them and down to the Pacific. Who would build this? Chinese have been building railroads all over the world. Do they send in their own teams of laborers, or would it be Brazilians and Peruvians?
Well, it'll be a mix of the three. That's clearly what's going to be at the table during discussions this week. A large part of the financing will likely come from China's big state-owned development banks, like the China Development Bank and the Export-Import Bank of China. They'll lend money to the governments, and there'll be some private sector and government bank investment as well. And there'll be some mix of private sector, Brazilian, Peruvian, but definitely Chinese construction and contractors and engineers definitely will be at the table. As you said, they've got the global expertise now. They've been doing this all over the world.
It's ironic, of course. There are many, many Chinese laborers that helped build the Transcontinental Railway in the United States way back when in the 19th century and in very difficult terrain up through the Rockies. This time, different deal. They would be the financiers. They would be the big power behind this financially. Still, mountains are mountains. What's the challenge of building a high-speed rail line over the Andes look like, Kevin?
Yeah, there's really three big risks here. One are engineering and logistical risks. You've got to go through or go over the Andes Mountains. You've got to meet different regulatory environments on the Peru side, maybe in part in Bolivia, and certainly through Brazil, through its different states and national regulations. China's got a big issue about how they're going to get paid back if they lay a lot of loans down on the table. But perhaps the biggest risks are the social and environmental risks. We are going through the Andes Mountains and parts of the Amazon rainforest. If it's done wrong, if it's not a high-speed rail that's really quick and has limited impacts on the environment and doesn't engage local communities and indigenous communities, it could really turn into a bit of a disaster. There's some estimates that say that the project would butt up against about 600 different indigenous communities. Maybe 15 of them are untouched at this point. And obviously, if you do it wrong and rip through the Amazon, you're going to hurt biodiversity and accentuate global climate change. And if there are big protests from indigenous communities that ripple into global campaigns against the project, it'll hurt China's bottom line, hurt the bottom line of the companies and the countries, and give China a tarnished image. And right now, it really has a leg up in the region.
Of course, China's track record on this is imperfect. On the other hand, their track record for building brand new rail is, they've done lots and lots of it. Here's the Brazilian president. This is Dilma Rousseff talking with Bloomberg's John Micklethwaite. This is a month ago or so, saying that Brazil has to make investments in its infrastructures to be competitive, and China right in the middle of all that.
We're going to be visited in the next 2 months by the Chinese Prime Minister. We will certainly be discussing their interest in ensuring a connection between the Atlantic and the Pacific. That's on the agenda for his upcoming visit. and I'm quite certain that we will have companies showing an interest in Brazilian ports.
An interest, to say the very least, for Americans. This is kind of a wake-up call if they haven't been paying attention. Kevin Gallagher is with us. His forthcoming book is The China Triangle, Latin America's China Boom and the Fate of the Washington Consensus. Donna in Detroit. Thank you for calling, Donna. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I've been concerned about China and particularly interested in the fact that China is also wanting to build a canal through Nicaragua, and you never hear about it in the United States. Our government doesn't seem to be too concerned about that. But also, China has a trans-Pacific partnership of its own and will not let the United States or Japan into that partnership. I think, yeah, you're right about the wake-up call. We need to repair our infrastructure. I also feel the reason that Obama wanted to restore relations with Cuba is related to those projects going on with China.
Well, maybe
Cuba on our side.
Yeah, maybe it's not the worst idea here. China's throwing a lot of money around in South America. Of course, Donna, I appreciate your call from Detroit. Of course, Kevin Gallagher, the U.S. has made its own pivot to Asia. I'm reading here in the Financial Times, they're saying this is in some way China saying, well, we can pivot too. We'll pivot into your backyard. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. China's been doing that since 2000, while the U.S., after September 11th, focused on the Middle East and some occasional wake-up calls to pivot to Asia. China's moved right into South America. In fact, since 2000, Latin America experienced what I call a China boom, its biggest growth period since the 1970s, led largely from exports to China. South American exports to China are now $112 billion, upwards of $130 billion for 2014. And just in 2013, China surpassed the United States as its leading destination for exports. It's pretty significant. The United States has really taken the region for granted. I couldn't agree with the caller more. I think the gesture about Cuba and some gestures that the Obama administration has made about immigration are good steps in the right direction. There's no way we can go dollar for dollar with the Chinese right now. We don't have the money, and Congress would never let it get through.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about China moving to build a brand new railway across South America as the U.S. struggles with its own aging infrastructure. We all saw the wreck in Philadelphia on Amtrak last week, the death that came out of that, a terrible scene there. China sitting down talking about a new railway, brand new high speed that would go from the Atlantic coast of Brazil right across that great agricultural expanse and more over the Andes Mountains down through Peru to the Pacific and boom, off to China. Kevin Gallagher is with us. His forthcoming book is The China Triangle, Latin America's China Boom and the Fate of the Washington Consensus. Kevin, what will they move over this rail?
They're going to be moving iron ore, petroleum, soybeans, and other primary commodities. That's what Latin America and South America in particular is really selling to the Chinese. It's really become a strategic region. If you think about all the electronics that are coming out of China that are sitting at our desks in our computers, the copper wire that's laced inside of those comes from copper mines in Peru and Chile. The steel that China's used to build all these new cities and those factories is actually forged from iron ore from Peru and Brazil, and soybeans from Brazil, Bolivia, Argentina are shipped off to China to feed livestock for a population that's getting richer and wanting more meat. And of course, soy and soybean oils are such a core part of the Chinese diet. So Latin America's really won the China lottery. As China's grown, it's needed all these primary commodities, and South America has it all. But they only have a real poor infrastructure, major infrastructure gap, as I said before, and a high-speed rail would be able to facilitate getting these goods to the Chinese markets much quicker. It would also help Chinese companies do some of these projects overseas and perhaps bring profits for China's development banks.
High-speed rail, we do not have much of that in the United States. Here they're talking about it for what's essentially a freight line. Talk about the technology, what China would be deploying, how it compares with what we have deployed around the U.S. or, for that matter, in China.
Well, those details are really being hammered out as we speak this week in South America. But if you look at what China's put together on the homeland in mainland China, we're talking about high-speed rail that dwarfs what you find in Switzerland and Europe. This is really the cutting-edge 21st century version, not the four-hour Amtrak from Boston to Washington.
It makes Switzerland look antique? What about compared to what we see in the United States?
Well, like I said, it's not like the four-hour Amtrak from Boston to Washington. This'll be the frontier. The Chinese engineers and the Chinese companies are really on the frontier of not only the project design and execution, but financing it. But it's going to be tricky to just you just can't export that success to another region that has different political systems, different interest groups concerned about it, and major geographical hurdles like the Andes Mountains and the Amazon rainforest.
Chris in Dover, Delaware. Chris, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. The U.S. was built in part with the railroad, and it really grew our country. And over the decades, they've let the infrastructure here in the country go by the wayside. We saw, you know, safety technology that could have been put in the area in Philly where that accident happened and the death and the injuries. China's stepping on board not only to grow, you know, their country through these business opportunities, even though they're having to put a huge investment there, they're going to get a return on that for decades and decades and decades. And I don't think the U.S. is thinking that way anymore with the railroad. It's the most economical way to move people and freight. And once the investment is done, it lasts for, you know, decades and decades. And they've just let it go by the wayside here. So I think they're thinking in the right step with what China's doing, and maybe it'll open some eyes up over here in the country to get them to rethink the railroad system, because truly our country over the decades has grown because of the railroad, but they've not given them the money they need to get the infrastructure up to speed.
Chris, we've got it. We're going to look at that in more detail in a moment. It may be that freight and passenger are two different stories in the United States, but still high speed, brand new across the whole continent, that is a kind of ambition we haven't seen in the United States for a while. I mean, Kevin Gallagher, you know, famously a couple of centuries ago, the United States, as a very young country, articulated the Monroe Doctrine, like stay out of our hemisphere. They were thinking about Europe. I'm sure they didn't even imagine China at that point. But our caller is right. If China builds this, and this isn't all, they're talking about $50 billion more just in Brazil in infrastructure improvements, in highways and more. Does that essentially lash Brazil into China's economic orbit, as Chris says, for decades?
Well, China's already in Brazil's number one export destination, and so got to keep the customers happy. I think the United States needs to welcome the Chinese as a compliment there, and the Chinese competition is healthy, like your caller just said. We haven't thought about infrastructure in the United States in a long time, and China built this, you know, miracle economy with infrastructure at its core. We've neglected that for almost a century, and if China's moving around the world financing big infrastructure projects, maybe that's going to teach us a few lessons as well.
Reading here, a Brazilian economist, Dumas in Sao Paulo, saying our arms are absolutely open to Chinese investment. Todd in American Falls, Idaho. Todd, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Very interesting topic. What you need to know is that American companies are already in position to reap the benefits of what China is doing.
How?
For instance, Monsanto Company has already built a Roundup plant in Brazil, Recife, Brazil, over 15 years ago. This is a boom for America coming indirectly with American dollar or Chinese dollars coming to America via the crops that are grown in South America. The average farm in the United States is still under 1,000 acres. The farms in Brazil are 100,000 acres or larger. And it's a tremendous amount of food that will be transported by those trains to China via the...
And you're saying, Todd, that helps the U.S. because American suppliers already, of agricultural chemicals and more?
More, yes. Much, much, much more. We have been on the forefront of that for the last 15 years. We're just waiting for a railroad to get the food out. Brazil will be the next breadbasket of the world. Where there is no vision, the people perish. The vision is that Brazil, being on the equator of the world, has the potential to feed the world again.
Todd, we've got it. Let me take it to Kevin Gallagher, if I may. Kevin, what about it? That the U.S. ends up, you know, South America gets pumped up on Chinese capital and the U.S. wins.
U.S. companies are certainly a major presence in the food sector, the soybean sector, the iron ore sector in South America. So those companies will definitely benefit, and U.S. consumers might benefit if it translates into cheaper prices. Thinking about Brazil being the breadbasket of the world, we've got to be concerned about that to a certain extent. If it is the breadbasket of the world, that's going to cause some significant deforestation and accentuate climate change, and we could all be worse off from that. It could also translate into a lot of lost elections. China and people around the world would be smart to look at the Belo Monte hydroelectric dam that's being financed, a big infrastructure project that has caused such an environmental disaster and such a strife with indigenous communities that it actually is being delayed incredibly and costs about $1.2 million a day for every day that it's delayed. It's been delayed for about 2 years and costs $2 billion. So if these projects aren't done right, high-speed rail with minimal footprint on the environment and doesn't engage local communities, they could really turn into being poster boys for exactly the opposite of what they're intended to do. And the U.S. will go down with that in addition to the Chinese and the Latin American governments.
Why would the U.S. go down if China screws up its transcontinental railway in South America?
Well, U.S. companies are right there, like your caller just said.
They wouldn't have the access to it. I mean, life is complicated. China's had its own scandals even at home. They had a terrible wreck there on their high-speed rail. They covered it up, the scandal around that. So it's not as though we've got a perfect record here. John in Kenosha, Wisconsin, you're on the air, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. My first reaction is skepticism. I lived in Peru and Brazil for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a few concerns. The first one, obviously, is the environment and the impact it's going to have on that. But I guess my biggest thing is looking at the players in the game, Brazil, Peru, China. These are all countries that don't have a very good track record when it comes to human rights, workers' rights. Slave labor is a very real thing still happening in Peru and Brazil to this day when it comes to mining and deforestation and everything like that. It's a big impact on those countries. And I see as imports increase, the price of food and these things actually go up in those countries for the locals, for the citizens of these countries. So I'm wondering, is this just going to help the people, the powers that be, have more power over the people and the corruption? Everything, is it just going to increase in these countries instead of really help the people of the countries?
We'll pick it up, John. Kevin Gallagher, what do you say?
Great point, John. You know, this is the test. This is the centerpiece of the China-Latin America relationship. It's going to be a world-class project. And if the Chinese with the Brazilian, Peruvian governments can put together a high-speed rail that has limited impacts on the environment, engages local communities from the get-go, and delivers goods to China, goods among Latin American governments, the Chinese are going to continue to have an incredible leg up in the region, and the region's going to be better off. U.S. companies are going to be better off. But if it all flares up, if they get it wrong from the get-go, like John said, the players don't have a great record on many of these issues. If it flares up, it could translate into high costs for the Chinese, bad image in the region for the Chinese, in addition to lost opportunities for economic growth and prosperity in South America.
Well, no matter what, it's a big hello to the United States and Americans looking at their infrastructure as China moves in with $250 billion over the next 10 years in Latin America of new developments there, $50 billion going to Brazil, $10 billion for a new brand spanking new transcontinental railway. Kevin Gallagher is a professor of global development policy at Boston University, joining us today from Washington, author of The China Triangle, forthcoming. Kevin, thank you very much for your time today. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Joining me now from Saratoga, California, to look at American infrastructure and rail in particular, Lou Thompson, international transportation consultant, chairman of the peer review group for the California High-Speed Rail Authority, railway advisor for the World Bank, 87 to 03, director of the Northeast Corridor Improvement Project, back from 78 to 86. Lou Thompson, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for the chance to be on the program. As I warn them, I have a little bit of a cold, so if you hear me cough, I hope no one is disturbed by that.
It's allergy season. Everybody's got something. What's your first thought, Lou, when we hear about China building or talking about, and very likely it would appear, to build a brand new transcontinental railway, high speed across South America? Are we eating the dust of China and soon South America?
My first thought is to laugh, to tell you the truth. There are a number of things that I'd like to say about the discussion
yes,
that we've
please.
Heard so far, because mm-hmm. I think it's important. First of all, the United States has freight railways and then they have Amtrak, and they are distinct. And we ought not to apply our thoughts about Amtrak to those of the freight railways. The U.S. freight railways are the best in the world, period. And there is nothing about their infrastructure that has been neglected at all.
Do we have high-speed freight rail in the United States?
No, of course not. That was going to be my second point. High-speed is not applicable to rail. High-speed is applicable to people.
What do you mean it's not applicable? This freight line that they're going to build is being described as high-speed. Is that not true?
That's absurd. Of course it's not true. They might build an industrial railway across Latin America, but no one would ever build a high-speed railway to haul soybeans through the Andes.
Yeah, it sounds nuts, but I don't know, man. You don't know what to believe these days. But it is being described in the press as high-speed, and I'm not sure why you are disputing that.
The press is wrong. They have to be wrong. There would be no reason why the Chinese would build anybody would build a high-speed railway all the way across Brazil, all the way through the Andes to a Peruvian port. That makes no sense.
So American freight rail infrastructure, you're saying, Lou, best in the world?
Yes, absolutely. The freight railroads, after deregulation in 1981, have invested $203 billion of their own money in their infrastructure, and it is in excellent condition. In fact, the only problem is, in some cases, they've run out of capacity because the Congress and the state governments have not had the willingness to maintain our highway system, and so in a sense we're forcing freight off the highways onto the railways. The railways are doing their best to finance it, but they've done an excellent job in that regard. Their accident rate has fallen by about 80% since then. Any comparison you do, and I've done many, simply shows that the U.S. freight railway system is the best in the world, period.
And
you can't say the same thing about Amtrak. That's a different issue.
Doesn't Amtrak often run over freight lines, Lou?
Yes, they do. They certainly do. But the what you need, and this is where the high-speed rail dilemma comes in,
okay.
What you need for freight is 50 miles an hour, 45 mm-hmm. miles an hour, 40 miles an hour, sometimes 60, but rarely more, mm-hmm. that you just haul long, long, long heavy trains. That's the way you get the economies of freight. Passengers don't want to travel at 40 miles an hour. Ideally, they like to travel at 200 miles an hour.
Sure.
But the difference between the track that you need for 200 miles an hour and the track that you need for 40 miles an hour is total, complete. So once you build it for 200 miles an hour, I will guarantee you the Chinese are not hauling any freight on their high-speed passenger system. They're hauling passengers. They're not hauling freight. And incidentally, it's very interesting, the Chinese high-speed rail system, the assumption is that it's successful. There is certainly some evidence that they're carrying more and more people, But there are serious studies in China that suggest that the railway will never be able to pay back the money they borrowed to build the system. And at some point, the government will have to step in and repay the loans of the railway that were used to finance high-speed rail.
Hi, everyone. Tom here. The On Point podcast is sponsored by Audible.com. Here at the show, we interview many book authors, whether they're fiction or nonfiction, bestsellers or lesser-known but equally important titles. We love making you aware. Now, Audible.com is helping make books even more accessible, allowing you to listen to great titles whenever and wherever you want. They offer 180,000 titles, and right now, On Point listeners can get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/onpoint, download a free title, and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. You can get started today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about China moving to build a brand new railway across South America, and the U.S. and its infrastructure. Rail has been very much in the news with the wreck in Philadelphia and the death there. Lou Thompson is with us, big transportation consultant. He's working on the peer review group for the California High-Speed Rail Authority. He's worked at the World Bank, is a railway advisor, was director of the Northeast Corridor Improvement Project, 77 to 86. It's a ways back, but he knows that area that the whole Philadelphia problem was in. Of course, that wreck last week and all the death and injury there got a lot of people's attention. Here was Democratic Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey talking with CBS's Face the Nation Sunday about the Amtrak derailment.
Congress should not put Amtrak in the position of choosing between positive train control safety and fixing crumbling bridges. We have to do both, and we've got to make sure they have the resources to do that.
But we've got cuts to the Amtrak budget. Republicans saying, hey, don't use this crash to get all upset about the budget. Here was Republican Mike Simpson out of Idaho, representative there, in favor of that cut to the Amtrak budget by about a fifth. In a House committee hearing last Wednesday, he said that the funding of Amtrak did not necessarily contribute to the derailment, the wreck in Philly.
I was disappointed to hear my colleague from New York a few minutes ago talk about the tragedy that occurred with Amtrak, and suggest that because we had not funded this properly, that that's what caused the accident, when you have no idea what caused this accident.
Well, they're dead. Here's the Amtrak CEO, Joseph Boardman, talking with CBS yesterday about what happened in the derailment.
Had that train stayed at 80 miles an hour instead of over 80 miles an hour, then we would have went right around the corner. A little bit rough, but it would have stayed on the tracks. This is a safe railroad.
This is a safe railroad. Of course, we've been seeing funerals. At Justin Zemser's funeral, this is on Friday, his friend Andrew Salzman talked to NBC about losing his 20-year-old friend in the Amtrak derailment last week.
A freakish accident, and there are a lot of questions on why. But again, it's about celebrating Justin's life today.
Joining me now from Vancouver, Canada, is Anthony Pearl, professor of urban studies and political science at Simon Fraser University, past director of Via Rail Canada. They offer intercity passenger rail service in Canada. Anthony Pearl, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Americans are trying to get a fix on where we stand in the world of infrastructure. We hear that we're billions and billions behind in investment. Lou Thompson tells us that in terms of freight, we're best in the world. But we're trying to square that with the picture of passenger rail that last week looked pretty bad in Philadelphia. You follow these things. You've got a lot of experience with rail. How do you see the U.S. standing here, Anthony?
Well, it's always a pleasure to hear from Lou, who is one of the leading experts in rail on the continent. I think that he was in Washington at the time that there was a rather messy divorce between freight and passenger rail. Amtrak is kind of the orphan stepchild of that divorce. The private railroads were going bankrupt, some big ones like the Penn Central did at the time, and the government policy solution was to essentially nationalize both. But the difference is that Conrail, the national freight carrier, had a successful return to the private sector, and all the great things that Lou has mentioned came true. But Amtrak has been the orphan stepchild from the 1970s on, and it's been sort of stuck in limbo. People are half in and half out, and that's a hard way to run a railroad.
So when Americans look at perhaps a brand new transcontinental road being built in South America, and then they look at their own rail, should they feel like, oh my gosh, we're falling behind, you know, South America, or we've got the best freight rail in the world and we've just got a little problem with passenger rail?
Well, I think that Americans should zoom out a little bit more and just go across the spectrum of infrastructure. It's not just Amtrak by any means. If you go to LaGuardia Airport or ride on some of the potholed highways out there and wonder whether you're going to make it across certain bridges on highways, there's an infrastructure gap between the U.S. and China, for example. I mean, Beijing Airport, Shanghai, Pudong Airport, these are places that are a lot bigger and newer and sometimes more impressive than most American airports. So it's a bigger question. The U.S. has not been reinvesting in its transport infrastructure across the board. Amtrak is just a piece of that problem.
Lou Thompson, how do you see the bigger infrastructure picture when it comes to the United States?
Well, I'm interested in the thought that there is an infrastructure gap between the U.S. and China. To the extent that gap exists, is very much in the U.S.'s favor. You compare our highway system overall in terms of its quality and access, it's far better than what China has. There are some aspects and some places where China has nice airports, and certainly they're building new ones, but overall, if you've been on China, as I have many times, you would never say that we should import their infrastructure system. The U.S. system is far better. I mean, we have to put this in perspective of, you know, what are the Chinese trying to accomplish in Latin America as opposed to what we might be trying to accomplish in the United States. You know, I think Anthony is absolutely right that that, you know, Amtrak is part of the problem. They were created by a divorce from the freight railways, and we've never been able to solve the dilemma of one group of people wanting Amtrak to do everything for everybody and another group of people not wanting to pay for anything. That's from the beginning it has been that way, and until we solve that dilemma, we will be faced with an Amtrak that is really not in good condition. That is not true of our commuter railroads, which in many cases are in much better shape, and it certainly isn't true of the freight side of the equation. Now, the Chinese obviously are doing two things. One, as an economic program, they're trying to secure access to resources all around the world, which they should do, and they're doing it well. I would hope that if we needed the same kind of resources, we would do the same. And the second part of this is politics of one kind or the other, geopolitics. I can't speak for that. What I can tell you as an example is that the Chinese built what was called the Tazara Railway from Dar es Salaam to Zambia. Many years ago, they built it with entirely Chinese labor, entirely Chinese materials. They gave it to the countries involved, and the countries involved have never been able to operate it successfully. So not all of these models of, you know, immense investment are successes.
Anthony Pearl, how would you compare Chinese planning and execution on infrastructure projects and American planning and execution?
Well, I think they're pretty much reciprocal or mirror images of one another. The Chinese do a top-down approach. You know, 10 people, mainly men, sitting around a table decide that they're going to build the world's biggest high-speed rail system, and within a decade they've got 10,000 miles of high-speed rail infrastructure in place. The U.S. is more of a bottom-up approach. It's very messy and conflictual. Democracy brings in everyone has an opinion, and as Lou and I both pointed out, those opinions are very divided on on things like government's role in passenger rail Amtrak. So it's different models, and I don't think that the U.S. is going to succeed in just trying to copy China's top-down approach. But I do think that China's approach may get them further this time than they did in the 1970s in Africa. I was also going to mention the Tazara Railway. That was done in sort of the full communist economic as well as planning mode. I think the Chinese have learned some lessons, and they're in a different place now. And I think this Latin American project will not be an exact copy of what they did with the Socialist Brotherhood in Africa in the 1970s.
Listeners pitching in here online, one writes, maybe we can watch China build this railroad in South America and learn something, then we can copy it here in the States. You say watch out for copying, but Elizabeth writes to us, for all the bravado of U.S. congresspeople about American exceptionalism, our legislature has decided to think very small and very defeatist about the American future. She writes, Congress is doing everything it can to hold us back, all for ideological reasons. Lou, do you see an ideological hurdle to 21st century cutting-edge infrastructure in this country?
Well, I think first, hearing Anthony's remarks makes me miss working with him. I hope we have a chance to do so in the future. Do I see an ideological problem? Of course, but that shouldn't be allowed to infect our assessment of what our freight railroads are. Yes, there is. There is one ideology that says we can't spend any money for anything, and that we'll fight the spending of money for anything, and instead prefer to return tax money to the people, especially to the rich. That's one system. There are apparently a majority of people will support that system, but it is not good for long-term planning and management infrastructure. And there's a conflict there. We apparently cannot have both, and I don't know how we're going to resolve that conflict.
Joe in Framingham, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Just when you think of infrastructure, things that could be done are things like every year when the water floods in the Mississippi or in the Ohio Valley, nobody thinks of the country of could we move water, say, from east to west. Things that, like in if you travel trains in Europe, the passenger trains are all separate. They're either above or below the highway. This whole infrastructure, thinking about what's really good for the people as opposed to the private interests. So those are just a couple of ideas.
Well, they do have to work together at some point, do they not, Joe, or at least
yes.
Dovetail?
Yes, but it seems like most of the interest is in the private sector and not really thinking about, well, you know, in Europe they've invested in the rail structure, so the passenger separate are separate, and they go either below or above the roads. They're totally devoid of any traffic crossing them,
yep.
And they've invested in it.
It all depends how you think about it, where you want to put that investment. Joe, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Brian in Montreal, Canada. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a fan of VRail, and I was glad you brought in somebody who knows that network very well. But I do want to emphasize one part we haven't touched on yet. When infrastructure like these big railroads gets built, they carry with them the whole baggage of the country they came from. And in the particular case, I want to alert people to the Chinese system will be built in the metric system. It'll be built in kilograms. It'll be built in centimeters. It'll be built and measured in newtons. And these are all units of measure that all the people in South America are going to get used to when they're working on it and then running that railroad. American industry hasn't yet, at least at home, converted to those international units, and Americans are going to take generations to get used to it because they've steadfastly and stubbornly refused to even open their eyes to the way the rest of the world runs things. There's an infrastructure of standards and ways of doing things that are underneath and around all of these infrastructure of things you can touch. That's an example. Montreal built its subway in 1967 to accommodate Expo 67, and this became made our city a world city. But it was built copying the French Parisian metro. And even now, when the Chinese want to submit a bid to beat hollow all the other competitors on the price of replacement cars, they can't do it because they don't build their machines and they don't build their trains on the Parisian standards.
Brian, let us pick it up right there. Lou Thompson, is this an issue? If China gets into major infrastructure in South America on a metric system, does that somehow cut American firms out from future development there?
All right. Well, most Latin American countries are already on the metric system. They look at the English system and with, I think, the same amusement that the Europeans do. So I think Chinese use of metric system wouldn't cause any more of a barrier than already exists. It is a barrier in U.S. But many U.S. export countries like the aircraft industry already work in metric. This is a self-imposed burden. We could fix it if we want to.
Another one, though, that we're choosing not to, I guess. Leah in Brattleboro, Vermont. Leah, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of circle back, if it's all right, to the original question, which I think your experts, we move quickly to how does the passenger train in the U.S. compare with airport in China or or our transportation system as a whole. But I want to kind of get back to the granular point, which is our passenger rail seems to be grossly worse than others in other countries and also worse than our commercial rails. And I would like to get maybe some perspective of them on how they think we compare, because I've lived all over the world, and the trains are just wonderful. And I live in a town where I rely on the Amtrak train to New York from Vermont, and it's just awful, and it's very sad to see a country as advanced as ours can't appreciate the trains.
Leah, I appreciate your call. Anthony Pearl, give us a little global comparison here. U.S. passenger rail, what it is, how it compares with others, and if it could be different, how?
Well, it could be different. The California experiment that Lou's involved in with the High-Speed Rail Authority is trying to bring sort of state-of-the-art, high-speed, world-class service between the Bay Area and Southern California. But before we get into that piece, where it sits, I would say it sits sort of comfortably in the middle. There's a lot of really difficult and unpleasant trains out there to ride. Right now, people are riding on the roofs of trains in India as we speak.
But that's hardly where Americans think of comparing themselves to the train in Sudan or somewhere.
Well, we're better than those. There's no question. I think that taking a train in Sudan or in India would at least some of those trains, third class, un-air conditioned.
Let's look
Indian
at the
train.
OECD. How about that? Make it industrialized nations.
Well, then it depends where you are in the United States. In the Northeast Corridor, despite the accident that happened, the Northeast Corridor moves a lot of people. It's now the single biggest carrier between New York and Washington, more than the airlines. Between New York and Boston as well, it's the main mode of transportation. It could be better, but it's definitely up there, comparable to the UK or Poland or some of the Central European countries. It's not at the passenger level that you would find in Western Europe, but those countries have made a priority choice to invest in that infrastructure.
Leah, I feel your pain and the frustrated aspirations of many Americans on the infrastructure and train front here. Interesting day. Anthony Pearl at the Simon Fraser University, Lou Thompson with us from Saratoga, California. Our thanks to both of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.